And what's the U.S. budget? It's like $3.5 trillion a year. So if you're a senator, you're in charge of your little piece of that budget, which is in the billions, probably $50 billion, $35 billion. And you know that every word that comes out of your mouth, people are going to parse, and that people are going to try to get a meeting with you, and they're going to try to act like your best friend. And I think it'd be really difficult, because you know that if you're that powerful and you have that much power in your life, that it's hard to have friends. Because how do you know if the person is really your friend, or if the person is looking for that friendship to kind of butter their own side of the bread, if you know what I mean? It's just, I think it'd be really, really, really tough. And I am glad the political season's over, but I pray for our politicians, because they have no friends. Or if they do, it's really, really difficult. Have you ever had a good friend? Ever had someone that you're just so close to that filled your life with joy? I remember when I was in high school and college, I had a friend, still have him. His name was Bill, and we did everything together, and truly my best friend. He knew exactly what to say and the right time to say it. He always listened to me. I always told people that I probably would have never made it through high school and college if I didn't have him as a friend. He now lives in Washington, and I was able to see him last month, and he's a pastor, so I was able to go visit his church. I hadn't visited it yet, and that was really fun to spend that time. You ever notice when you get together with someone that you haven't seen in a while, but your friendship is so close that it's almost like the time hasn't passed? And he's one of those types of friends. And I pray that God finds a friend like that for you in your life, because it is so wonderful. We're going to look at friends today. We're doing just a real quick two sermon series on Old Testament prophets. And last week we looked at Jeremiah, and this week we're going to look at Isaiah. Now, Isaiah lived before Jeremiah, about 750 years before Jesus. He's an Old Testament prophet. You all have heard of Isaiah, because when we start looking at Advent and the prophecies about Jesus coming, there's so much of that in Isaiah. And so he's a very important prophet, and his prophecies are extremely important. But we're going to look at a very obscure, and when I mean obscure little chapter in Isaiah. It's chapter 50 of Isaiah from this morning, where Isaiah says something that's really unusual. The prophet Isaiah hears from God and writes down all the sayings of God. And for most of the book of Isaiah, you have this, and the Lord said this, and then the Lord told me to tell his people this. And Isaiah is almost like a scribe telling all the prophecies of God. But there are a few times where he kind of changes. And he moves into first person, and it's no longer the Lord said this, but Isaiah starts talking in the first person. I say this. I do this. I am this. It's kind of an unusual thing in the book of Isaiah, but it happens a few times where Isaiah kind of makes this shift, and he starts talking about himself. And this is one of those places. It's Isaiah 4, chapter 50, beginning at verse 4. And what Isaiah says is this: "The sovereign Lord has given me," so he's switching, now he's talking about himself, "the sovereign Lord has given me a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. He wakens me morning by morning, wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed." So what Isaiah is saying here is that the Lord has given him two things. One is a well-instructed tongue, and the other is an ear who listens like one being instructed. Now, this is fascinating, because what Isaiah truly is saying, if you dig into it, is that he's saying that he's this amazing friend. And there's no other really way to put it. Isaiah is a great friend. What makes a good friend is actually in this one little verse. It's first, a well-instructed tongue to know the word that sustains the weary. Have you ever had a friend that seems to know just what to say and when to say it? Have you ever had a friend like that? My friend Bill is like that. When we were in high school And, of course, all people have problems in high school. I could talk to my friend Bill, and it just seemed like he knew what to say and when to say it. And it was just really kind of a wonderful thing. I remember a number of years ago, it was 2009, there was a death in the family. It was my godchild. And it was really a tragic thing. And I was really hurting quite a bit. And I have some friends that we meet with once a month. They're pastor friends. And there's one in particular that knew that that my niece had died. And he came up to me and he put his arm around me. And he just said the most encouraging, beautiful words. They were healing words. And it was kind of strange because I would tell other people about my grief. I would tell other people about what was going on in my life. And I appreciated all the kind words, but for some reason, he had that moment in time, the right words to say at the right moment that really provided incredible healing in my life. And have you ever had a friend just come up and say the right words at the right moment? And I know that sometimes we worry, particularly when it deals with grief or death or something like that, that we're so worried about saying the wrong words, aren't we? We don't want to go up to someone and just say the wrong thing, and so we don't go up at all. But you will have to understand that I don't think that was necessarily him. I think that was God kind of prompting him in his life. I think sometimes we have to get over our fear and take that first step and go and be present and let God speak through us the words of comfort. And it may not come through us, but if you've ever been around somebody that's grieving, sometimes the best words are just the very few words that you speak, but most importantly, it's just the presence being there and allowing God to use you as a conduit. And apparently Isaiah is that way. Apparently when Isaiah is talking about this, that God has given him a tongue, a well-instructed tongue, to know the word that sustains the weary. But he goes on. He says, he wakens me morning by morning. He wakens my ear to listen like one being instructed. So it's not just that you speak the right words or that you're present with a person, but that you listen. And how many times friendship is really about listening? Have you ever had somebody that you have a problem and you go to them and you want to tell them the problem, and as soon as the words start coming out of your mouth, they stop listening? They say, well, here's my problem and here's what I do. And it becomes more about them than it is about what you want to talk to them about. What Isaiah is saying is a true friend is one who listens intently as one being instructed. I mean, you know what it's like to sit in class and listen to the professor's every word. You don't interrupt them, right? Well, sometimes you do, I suppose. Depends if you know more than the instructor. That happened to me once. Never mind. I know, this is so embarrassing. Anyway, so... But you should not interrupt the instructor if you're listening. You're trying to learn. So it's the same thing when you're listening to your friends. If they're sharing with you something deep from their heart, don't interrupt them. Let them talk. Let them share what it is. And then if you've got a well-instructed tongue, you could turn around and say, this is what I heard you say. And they can say, no, it wasn't that, it was this. And you try it again, you keep going, and pretty soon you're getting the message of what it is that they're trying to say. That's what Isaiah is talking about what it's like to be a great friend that listens and says the right thing at the right time. You know, there's a story about Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I did not know this story, but I found it amusing. He often endured long receiving lines at the White House. He complained that no one really paid attention to him. Can you imagine that? One day, during a reception, he decided to try an experiment. To each person who passed down the line and shook his hand, he murmured, I murdered my grandmother this morning. The guest responded with, oh, marvelous, keep it up. Good work, sir. We're so proud of you. God bless you, sir. It was not until the end of the line, while greeting the ambassador from Bolivia, of all people, that his words were actually heard. The ambassador leaned over and whispered, I'm sure she had it coming, sir. Have you ever had that happen in your life? I don't think they're really listening to me. And, you know, it gets you into so many problems. I remember, this is a true story. I was, it was the year before I was marrying Jennifer. We both went to the same church in Phoenix. And I'm standing there before the church service. And this lady, who is my youth director, comes up to me and she said, Jennifer's grandparents are right over there. You should say hi to them. And so I started. You know, she's like, wait. But I didn't hear her, right? And I go up to this couple and it's like, hi, I'm David. I'm going to marry your granddaughter. And they look at me and they're like, we don't have a granddaughter. And if we did, I'm not sure we want you to marry. I turn around and she's like, oh, no, the other family. I was so embarrassed because I didn't listen, right? I should have said, now which couple? Show me, point out. But you know, I've always had a problem with listening. Are you a good listener? Do you listen simply? Are you present in the moment when someone's talking to you? Do you speak good words? God calls us to be his hands and his feet in the world. And what makes us a bad friend is most oftentimes our own sinful nature, where in every single relationship, it seems like we have a tendency to think more about ourselves in a relationship than the other person in the relationship. And it truly is that sin of self-centeredness that causes all of our relationships to fail, because we don't really treat other people as Jesus would treat them, as we would want to be treated. We don't follow the golden rule. In almost every relationship we have this tendency to make it more about ourselves than about the person that we love, the person we care for, the person that's in this relationship with us. What truly makes a good friend is not that. What truly makes a good friend is to be able to listen and to say the right words at the right time. I tell you, it is my desire and my hope for this congregation and for everybody in it that you be a good friend, that you be one filled with God's Spirit, that you're present in the moment, that you're present in the relationship. When God calls you to be a good friend to somebody, that you use your life and your resources to be as good of a friend as you possibly could be. Wouldn't it be great if the Christian church were known as being great friends? That if anybody had a problem, they could go to a Christian and they know that they'd be heard and cared for and that people would love them. And it wouldn't be about them. It'd be about my needs and what I'm looking for. I'm just saying. But Isaiah goes on, because it's really interesting. We move to chapter 50, verse 5, where Isaiah is still talking about himself, but he says it just in a few different words. He says, the sovereign Lord has opened my ears. I have not been rebellious. I have not turned away. I offered my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who pulled out my beard. I did not hide my face from mocking and spitting. It's just fascinating, because we don't know what's going on in Isaiah's life, but apparently they're mocking him, they're spitting him. He's this great friend. Obviously, God's given him the right words to say. He's listening, but they're still mocking him and spitting him. And if you sit there and you look at it, you say, well, why would they do that? But there's something about Isaiah you should know. That hidden within Isaiah is another message. It's kind of interesting. There are four times in the place of Isaiah where you're looking at it and you're reading it, and Isaiah turns to first person. He starts describing himself. But as these four places start to reveal themselves, it's like that magic eye. You remember that from the 90s? Where you would look at this thing, and if you focused just right, you could see a 3D image appear. Do you remember that? If you kids have not heard about this, I'm sorry. Go home, look it up online. You'll find it. But you can look at it and stare at it, and then pretty soon an image appears. And it's the same thing with Isaiah. Four times he tells you about himself, but as he starts talking about himself, an image appears, and you realize he's not talking about himself at all. I mean, he might be talking about himself. It might be things very specific to Isaiah. But you get a picture of somebody else appearing from the words in the text of Isaiah. And it really comes close to home, where he says, he who vindicates me draws near. Because what you realize is that it's not really about Isaiah at all. It's about a different friend. It's about a friend who's going to come along 750 years after Isaiah. It is the true friend that we all have. It's a prophecy about Jesus. It's the suffering servant. It's the servant of the Lord. That's who Isaiah is talking about. He's talking about Jesus. Jesus is the one who listens. Jesus is the one who has the right words to say. Jesus is the one who loves you even when you do the wrong things and you say the wrong things and you aren't the right friend that you should be. Jesus is the one that comes to you and says the exact right words that you need to hear. Because Jesus is the true friend. I was doing some research, and I didn't know this, but you might. Jackie Robinson, you ever heard of him? He was a baseball player. He was a player in the Major League Baseball, and he was the first one to break the race barrier. The Brooklyn Dodgers started him at first base in 1947. That was a long time ago. But not all the people were happy about this. He faced jeering crowds in every stadium. While playing one day in his home stadium of Brooklyn, he committed a serious error. His fans up in the stands, you know, Brooklyn fans, started jeering him and ridiculing him. And he stood there at second base, humiliated, while the fans stood there and jeered. And then shortstop Pee Wee Reese kind of stopped the game and walked over to Jackie Robinson. He came over and he stood next to him and he put his arm around him and he faced the crowd. And the fans grew quiet. And Robinson later said that that arm around his shoulder saved his career. We have an arm around our shoulder. When things start going wrong and people start booing and jeering at us, we have a friend that stops the game, comes over and puts his arm around us and looks at the crowd and says, you want to mess with him, you mess with me first. Now, folks, that is a friend. That is a friend in Jesus who loves and cares for us so very much. In his name, we pray.